Welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday, the actuality news show, offering unique insights and in-depth analysis featuring South Africa's top business leaders, newsmakers, and analysts for today's professionals. Your host, Jeremy Mads.
Hello and welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday. I'm Jeremy Mags with 30 minutes packed with the latest South African and global news. We are live right now and then you can catch it later as a podcast. Stay tuned for interviews with key business and political figures, prominent newsmakers and leading experts delivering all the essential updates you need fast and focused. It's Wednesday, the 18th of September. On the program today, can the beleaguered road accident fund find an off-ramp away from its myriad problems? We'll speak to Ocean Basket's chief executive after a public furor accusing the group of employing undocumented workers, why KZN is on a mission to get more Africans to travel to its shores, and how do local companies stack up in terms of customer experience compared to international counterparts? The Road Accident Fund is seemingly not budging on its refusal to apply an accounting policy as required by the Auditor General, which would see its liabilities balloon. In its annual results for the year ending March, the RAF reporting liabilities of 36 billion rand as determined by the accounting methodology used by the organisation. Well, we're in conversation now with Makintosh Polela, who speaks for the fund. And first of all, let's start with this, and there are lots of issues to discuss. The Transport Minister Barbara Creasy calling on you to develop a plan to decrease the backlog of cases currently clogging the court roll in the Gauteng division of the High Court. Is there a plan and when is it going to be delivered?
Look, it's something that we had already started doing. We had already started meeting with the lawyers. We had two meetings with the Black Lawyers Association to work out a plan where we settle a lot of cases that are close to settlement, but for some reason, we haven't got a full complement of documents, because you must understand that as a social benefit, for us to be able to process claims, we need to get a full complement of documents. We've got a lot of people who have submitted claims, but without the required ID book, your accident report, or your comprehensive health report. So those are the things that we were working on already. So the plan that you're talking about is currently in the works and it's going to be delivered to the minister, so that we make it clear to the minister that there are things that we are working on to be able to clear the backlog. But we also had a backlog campaign that we started in April, which is going very well, where we're sensitizing people to say, you need to go to your lawyers and submit all the documents, because you must understand that 97% of our claims are coming through by way of representation from lawyers, and only 3% are people coming directly to us. So that plan had already started before the minister, started as Minister of Transport, but it's just a matter of doing a couple of additions with the lawyers that we're working with and to make sure that we clear the backlog. And those cases that have been referred to the court, that they go by way of settlement.
All right, let's move on to another issue, a proposed shift away from lump sum payments to annuity-based payouts. Why is this being proposed, and what would the impact be both on claimants and the overall financial health of the RAF, which you'll concede is in a fairly parlous state?
So the reason that we are doing that is because it is almost impossible for us to be paying lump sums to everybody who has claimed and still remain in a healthy financial condition as an entity. So as part of the RAF Bill of 2023, what we proposed when we sent the bill to Parliament in October last year was exactly that, amongst other things, to say that we need to pay people an installment, our claimants an installment, that will allow us to be in a fairly healthy financial condition, in the case that lump sums chew up on a lot of our financial resources. In this case, we have paid, as we announced, around 45 billion, but we still owe around 8.3 billion in claims that need to be paid. And that is not sustainable. And if and when we pay in annuity, it will keep us in a fairly healthy condition. But that, as well as getting rid of the DILIC system, which is a litigation-based system where people have to be represented by lawyers, because we pay billions of rand to lawyers. In 2020, we were paying around 12.8 billion. We have reduced that to around 13.8 billion. But we need to come to a point where we save all that money and redirect it to claimants.
Further to your financial difficulties is that the RAF now wants to exclude individuals who can afford separate cover. Why? What criteria would be used? And how is this going to affect the fund's financial outlook?
Look, the argument here is that you and I, Jeremy, can afford to get cover for ourselves, because we are in a better condition. We are the lucky ones. However, RAF covers all and sundry. Whether you are middle class, rich, or you are a billionaire, it covers you. And that's not fair to, you know, the people that need this money the most. And so the argument is, you and I can afford to pay our own cover using a private entity. Why are we dipping into a social benefit? We don't need this social benefit as the people that can afford it. It needs to be going or redirected to the people that cannot afford it.
That's a very generalist approach. I mean, you're suggesting that a certain strata of people can afford it. They might say, absolutely not, and it's my right to claim on the RAF.
Of course, and that is a sound argument. But we are not saying that the middle class should not be covered. But there are people who can afford to cover themselves. The rich can afford to cover themselves. And so why are they being covered by the RAF? We pay the rich a lot of money. The rich, when they say, I have had loss of earnings, it means that we have to pay hundreds upon hundreds of millions of rand. And that's not something that can be enjoyed by poor people. The person that we paid the most was a foreign national that we paid almost a billion. That almost a billion could have paid thousands of people.
All right. So who are the rich, in your opinion, and what criteria would be used to determine eligibility?
That is still in the works. And we're going to come up with a proposal to say people in this kind of pay grade, you know, should not be covered by the RAF. But rich people, for now, we're just saying should not be covered by the RAF.
You do appreciate that this will be taken on review, no doubt.
Indeed, we do appreciate it, as everything that is as drastic, as far-reaching. But it's a conversation that we need to have nonetheless.
Now, you're in trouble because of your refusal to apply international financial reporting standards as required by the Auditor General. How do you justify your current accounting methodology?
We justify that because we're not an insurance, we're a social benefit. And insurance is where the person that needs to cover it pays every month an annuity, so that in the case that you know, they get involved in an unfortunate incident, then they get covered by that insurance. We are very, very different. The people that claim from us are not the people that pay at the pump. You pay at the pump, I pay at the pump because I'm the driver. But if I'm involved in an accident and somebody gets injured that is a passenger, the Road Accident Fund covers you as the wrongdoer so that you don't get sued by the passenger. The only time that a driver can claim from the Road Accident Fund is when it's not his mistake, it's another driver. And in that case, it's the wrongdoer and the other driver becomes the victim. And that's how we justify it. We are not an insurance.
It seems the Auditor General, though, has a very different view. How are you going to resolve this?
We're going to have to resolve it somehow. Now we are at the courts, but we are also having meetings and we're talking about it. And at the end of the day, one of us has to yield. We were classified as a social benefit a long time ago. And so we are having these conversations, and it's one of the matters that at some point has to come to finality. And we are looking forward to that matter being put to bed. We are talking to the Auditor General and all the stakeholders that have an interest in this. We are at the courts, but at some point, we need to settle.
But you're in a bit of difficulty because you've got an adverse opinion from the Auditor General on your latest financials, and you've got to address concerns around accounting practice while maintaining your current accounting approach. A difficult one to resolve.
It is a very difficult one to resolve. When it comes to the Road Accident Fund, what has been happening over the decades is that it has always been a balancing act. It started opening its doors in 1946. It has had no less than 7 commissions of inquiry. It has gone through several bankruptcies. And around 1986, it ceased to be an entity of the private sector and it was handed over to the state. But what happened is that it was handed over as a poisoned chalice. And in its structural existence, as it is now, it is unsustainable. And hence, we are saying a lot of things that have to be changed at the Road Accident Fund, including the way that we have said in that we need to get rid of the lawyers. We need to stop paying foreign nationals. We need to start paying people annuity and a lot of things that we have put as a prayer on the RAF Amendment Bill of 2023.
Mackintosh Polela, thank you very much indeed, speaking for the Road Accident Fund.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
Now, the seafood restaurant chain Ocean Basket is strenuously denying a report by the Department of Labour alleging that its Menlyn Mall Pretoria branch owed its employees more than 800,000 rand in unpaid wages. In a statement overnight, the department flagging what it termed various unlawful practices at the restaurant, including unpaid wages. I want to talk now to the Chief Executive Officer of Ocean Basket, Grace Harding. A very warm welcome to you. And you say the department has got this completely wrong.
Hi, by the looks of things, we were obviously very shocked when we read that that press release. And we went into the restaurant yesterday with independent auditors and all sorts of other people. And we've done a full audit again. And most of the things mentioned there, we can't find it. So what I'm saying is please can you show me where you got the information so that we can sit together. So we're not saying, oh, they're wrong. But what we're saying is what we see is not what they are saying.
So how then can you explain to me then how any Ocean Basket and the staff members are vetted, particularly, Grace, when it comes to legal documentation and compliance with labour law?
Well, this is what we've been doing for years and years. I mean, there's laws of the government. We live in this land, so you pay UIF. If you employ foreigners, they have to have proper paperwork. You pay your taxes. So Ocean Basket's been going for nearly 30 years. Will there be instances where the Labour government or safety department conduct inspections and they find a few things out of whack? Of course it will happen. Then we fix it. But what I don't understand and I don't think is constructive is to issue a media statement and then we verify the documents in the restaurant and we cannot find the data that they are submitting to the media. So it's not, according to us, we don't know where they're getting those figures from.
So obviously you've made initial overtures to the Department of Labour ahead of you sitting down with representatives. What have they told you so far?
I've been referred from person to person. The only thing I've been told is that they have the right to conduct ad hoc audits in restaurants, which we don't mind. We do them ourselves. And now we've just reached out to them to say, please give us the documentation that you have. And we're awaiting that report, including copies of all the submissions, is going to be ready today. And we've been asked to email it to a member. Eventually, I've got someone's email address, and I'm just going to be emailing it. But our stuff in Menlyn is not compliant. Could there be one document that's wrong? Perhaps. But from what they accused us of and the audit we have conducted, we do not find any correlation.
So what do you think?
And if we do, we'll take action. I mean, we don't want our restaurants to not conduct themselves legally.
Of course. So what do you think is behind this then?
Oh, I wish I knew. I don't know. I mean, we can make assumptions, but I don't want to. I mean, they raided The restaurant, it's a nightclub type restaurant, Babel, above us. Maybe that information got confused with ours, but nobody knows. And I don't want to guess, and I don't want to argue. I just want to say, let's work together, because I want the restaurants to be legal, and they want the restaurants to be legal. So we actually have the same objectives. What I don't understand is the intent behind issuing that report, which has really not been cool for us, and all the adverse comments on X and all of that stuff. I mean, life is too short and people get sad.
Grace Harding, it does seem extraordinary, though, that they are so specific with the amount of unpaid wages.
Yes,
813,969 rand. It would suggest to me that they have done some form of due diligence here.
Absolutely. So just show it to us, because the due diligence we've done with independent people does not raise that amount, and there are no monies outstanding to staff. And we are very happy to sit with them and show them, and we will email Michael Mseza. I've got his number now. This is the fourth referral I've had. So, for example, a guy came in from Health and Safety, Karabo, fantastic guy. He did an inspection. He found a few things out, you know, they were not in place. He said, no problem. You have 60 days to fix it. Please submit the documents to me. It was a wonderful experience. And at the same time, an inspector from Department of Labor walks in, and we just receive one piece of paper that doesn't say anything about anything. And then we see the press release. So I don't know what it's about, but I just want to launch summer. I want to make sure that everyone's legal, that the restaurants are good, that people are okay, and that we work together with government.
What other internal processes are you embarking on then, Grace Harding, to ensure that other restaurants in a very widespread chain are also not going to be visited by the Department of Labor, and perhaps something similar happens?
Well, they will be visited, because the Department of Labor has already put out a notice to say we're coming on the weekend. I don't know why they have to inspect on a weekend, because that's when we can, you know, all our restaurants can trade nicely. The paperwork could be valid on a Monday as well, but that's something we can redesign with them when we sit around the table. We have to ensure that lots of things are in place. This is not new to us. Whether it's us, whether it's the other brands, your restaurant has to be clean, the food has to be nice, the paperwork has to be in place. So this is how we run our business. Are there sometimes transgressions on any of those items? Sure they are. If they are, do we take action? Severe action. But we're not new at this. I mean, we didn't start yesterday.
How much reputational damage do you think has been done?
I wish I could calculate it, and I think it's bad, and, you know, people are saying things, but I don't know, Jeremy, you know, and I don't want to focus on, oh, the reputational damage is worth this much money, and I want to, you know, I don't want to get into that. I just want us to work together, and we've been talking about this for months, even from COVID time. Let's work together. Let's fix it together. So I'm not against any of it. But this is harmful, and it's sad for a business in the restaurant industry that's trying to get back on its feet. Come on, guys.
But having said that, you know, the Department of Labor might very well find that there is transgression, and you would have to have some sympathy with the staff who might not have been paid.
Of course, but to date that hasn't happened. Of course. I mean, if they find a transgression with an illegal worker, we absolutely would have to take action, and that man will be sad. And if there's a staff member not being paid, and I find out, I take action. So they're not the only people inspecting. We are inspecting all the time. This is what we do every day. We must make sure our franchisees are compliant, they are successful, the guest is okay, and their staff are okay.
Right.
So I'm not saying that everyone's cool every day.
All right, Grace Harding, I'm going to leave it there. We will obviously reach out to the Department of Labor. Thank you very much indeed. Chief Executive Officer of the Ocean Basket Group.
MoneyWeb at midday for all your up-to-date stories.
Now, there's a new SA tourism report that shows more than 2 million Zimbabweans travelled to South Africa last year, the highest number of African visitors to the country. However, very few of those visitors are making their way to KwaZulu-Natal. So, representatives of the province, as well as delegates from the Department of Economic Affairs on a trade mission to Zimbabwe and Zambia, all with the objective of increasing regional air travel, supported by Durban Direct, who works to support airlines introducing direct air services to Kinshasa Airport, as well as the Dube Trade Port, the operator of a special economic zone in KZN. The idea, I understand, is to make the province a destination of choice for regional passenger travel. In conversation now with Hamish Erskine, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Dube Trade Port. And first of all, then, what specific strategies are being employed then to encourage more visitors?
So I think it's less than it's a debate and more it's part of our overall route development strategy. So maybe just to take you back a second, we have what's known as a route development committee, which brings together all the government players first off, so your tourism authorities in the areas of both Etiquette, but also across the province, the provincial tourism film as it's now known. And then AXA, ourselves, Dube Trade Port, Trade and Investment KwaZulu-Natal, Ezimvela Wildlife. So everybody who's got a vested interest in developing new routes and new air services from Kinshasa International Airport for a variety of reasons. Air services bring a lot of economic activity. They bring business travelers. They bring tourists. But importantly for us is Dube Trade Port as well, because we own and operate the cargo terminal. Wide-bodied and narrow-bodied, even aircraft, carry cargo, significant volumes of cargo. So we've all got a vested interest, and we come together as a route development committee, which we've been doing for quite a long time now, over 12 years, driving the, you know, obviously a lot of investment in Kinshasa, and we really wanted to benefit and have the impact on the regional economy. So really, why are we going hard on this new push, to answer your question, is we had a great run between 2015 and 2020 where we really accelerated our program of going out and talking to the airlines. And we've got essentially our strategies two-pronged. We want to grow the regional connectivity. So we want to go into the SADC region and beyond. And there's a strategy around that because that's where we want to build business, trade, you know, take advantage of the Africa Free Trade Agreement. And then obviously we want to build the international connectivity, which brings the tourism, the travelers, VFRs, it's known, which is visiting friends and relatives, to really start driving that traffic. And we had a great run between 2015 and 2020, where we were able to regionally bring on, you know, Lusaka, Harare, Mauritius, Windhoek, Gaborone. So we got a nice regional network going. And then obviously in the same time, we were able to really establish the Emirates, which is a seven times as a daily flight into Dubai. We brought in Qatar, Turkish, Ethiopian at the time, and then culminating ultimately in our busiest route, which is Durban-London, and we started the London Heathrow route with British Airways. In each one of those instances, working with the airlines. And then, of course, we're just about to, you know, with our partners, AXA, about to reach the ultimate number, which was to get us to 6 million passengers in the airport by, which was our first major target. And that happened, and then COVID hit.
Only COVID, though, Hamish. So you've made a lot of progress here. Your argument makes sense. But aside from the pandemic, there are also safety concerns, as far as KZN is concerned, as well as political instability in the region. That would have an impact, surely, on your efforts to boost regional air traffic to the province.
To some degree. I mean, I think, if the way to look at it is airlines generally are, and an air route is generally a very expensive operation to run. I mean, can you imagine with the oil prices, the dollar rand exchange rates, you've got to go into a market that you know you're going to be able to sustain and grow because it is a big outlay from an airline. Now, obviously, to your point, KZN, we all got hit by the COVID pandemic. In fact, the COVID pandemic almost devastated the airline industry, and it is in and of itself globally is in recovery. But there are some key factors which need to be kept in mind, like the shortage of aircraft and things like that, which are slowly but surely working their way out of the system. So KZN, correct. I mean, we've been very realistic in looking at it and saying, you know, there were factors that were additional to KZN. We had the floods. The floods did an enormous amount of damage to the infrastructure that services the city. So we had problems with the beaches, as you know, which, you know, with the wastewater treatment works. Those are all now being fixed, but it's going to take a little bit of time to get that done. Then we had the political civil unrest. So there were a lot of factors, and then the beach thing sort of prolonged. So where we got hit a little harder, quite a bit harder than everybody else, and we've obviously weren't able to fully take advantage of the revenge travel type of sort of post-COVID that Cape Town was, where, you know, they did exceptionally well, and that's great, and it's really put, you know, South African tourism, you know, back in the global map, you know, and you know, they've had a good run. Mm. What our approach is now is to rebuild and bring all the partners together. What's exciting about it, Jeremy, at the moment is, for the first time, we're really getting a lot of positive feedback from the private sector in KZN, who are saying, you know what, we want to join this process and, you know, bring our value to destination marketing, because there's a lot of good product coming on. I mean, I'm sure you're aware, you know, South Africa's next major resort is being built at Tinley Manor with Club Med, and that's opening in June 2026. So, you know, the northern game reserves are doing well, and we want to link these sort of warm water beach experiences with the big five right. experiences.
Hamish, yeah, you raised the issue of ticket cost, and you're going to have to overcome perception, or in fact reality in many cases, as far as the notoriously high flight prices within Africa are concerned.
Yes.
So how do you address this issue to make air travel more, one, affordable, but just to overcome the negativity?
Yeah, you know, it's a tough one, and I don't want to just give an easy answer, because there's a wide range of factors involved in why ticket prices are where they are, you know, in South Africa. A lot of it is the exchange rates and the varying exchange rates. So most airlines, almost all airlines around the world, work on a dollar-based pricing. So if your ticket sales are predominantly on the South African side of the leg, you know, you're earning in rands, and very often you've got to wait to a certain point before you repatriate those as an international airline, for example. So exchange rate is a major factor. I think also your general economic conditions, you know, your interest rates, your inflation, your economic growth are determinants as to how much, you know, available expendable income people have. And that then sort of translates into then the number of people actually flying. Now, the more people that are flying, the higher the load factors, as it's known on the aircraft, generally, and the better the number of seats available on any particular route, you know, be it, you know, Durban-Joburg or Joburg-Cape Town or whatever. That allows for more competitive pricing. And, you know, we've been there before, where we had a lot of low-cost carriers in the market and others. The more competition, the more the price comes down.
All right. Hamish Erskine, I'm going to leave it there. Unfortunately, time is against us, but you do make a compelling argument. I appreciate your time today, Chief Executive Officer of the Dube Trade Port.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
I want to finish the program with this. The International Customer Experience Awards, taking place in more than 50 countries and will now take place in South Africa. So how will local brands stack up against global competitors? And I wonder if there are new approaches to customer service in this digital age in which we do commerce. Lynn Baker is with us now, Customer Experience Specialist and Chief Executive Officer of the SA Customer Experience Awards. Lynn, welcome to you. So how does this country compare globally when it comes to customer experience practice?
Hi, Jeremy, and thanks very much for having me. South Africa is really faring extremely well in terms of customer experience internationally. We've come up with a lot of innovations that have got a lot of notice for international companies around experience, particularly from a digital perspective. So we're faring very well internationally.
Why do consumers these days want an experience? Surely it's much more germane to be in and out as quickly as possible.
Well, you know, convenience and flexibility are certainly on our consumer's radar. However, our customers and our consumers have become incredibly sophisticated over the years, particularly since COVID. And they're demanding a lot more from the company and the products and services that are being offered. So it's really important they don't just walk in and not for them or for us. From a business perspective, the more that we can give them an experience, the more we can bring them back and we can create customer retention, which is better for growth and better for sales in the future. So customers are no longer satisfied with just being a number, with just walking out and buying a service going on to a website. They want an experience. They want to be acknowledged and they want something that's memorable. They want companies to know who they are, where they are, what their needs are, and fulfill those needs and deliver on their brand promise.
Lynn, I'm going to leave it there. We are out of time, but regrettably, the connection is not great either. But I think that we do have the general gist. So thank you very much for joining us, Chief Executive Officer of the South African Customer Experience Awards. That is Lynn Baker. And just before I leave you, on our poll today, one of our lead stories, Ocean Basket's Labor Department run-in. I'd like your view on that. Do you think it's an issue? Do you think it needs more investigation? Or do you completely trust the brand? If you have a view on that, I invite you to either go to our X or LinkedIn page. And that is our program for today. MoneyWeb at Midday is live at noon weekdays. We're then up as a podcast. Thank you for listening and goodbye.
Listen to the daily live stream of MoneyWeb at Midday or download episodes on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts and Spotify, or follow MoneyWeb News on social media for more updates. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.